All right, no, my hooky, my welcome back to Drive on 95 BFM. It's time for That's the Spirit, and joining us right now is Peter Linham. Peter, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Of course. I'm going into this one a little bit blind. You did mention on the phone just a minute ago that we were going to be talking about Shia Islam, but can you run us through the topics for today?
Yes, well, the crucial aspect of this topic is that Iran is the only Shia state in the world. And the Ayatollah, who is the permanent head of Iran, has both a religious and a political significance. And that comes from the very essence of Shia Islam. So what's unfolding at the moment is very, very intimately connected with Shia Islam and how it is different from Sunni Islam. So Shias are only 10% of the total world population of Islam, which is the second largest religion in the world. So they're a small group concentrated these days in Iran, in the Yemen, and in certain parts, and particularly in Iraq also. And you can kind of see that a lot of the troubles of the Middle East stem back not just to the conflict between Israel and Islam in general, but between the tensions between Shia and Sunni Muslims.
I just wanted to, maybe address one of the points you made earlier. I think that Iraq and Azerbaijan also have pretty significant Shia populations, but is there any way that
you're right about Azerbaijan, yes, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. But is there any way that maybe like Shia Islam is implemented in Iran that's different to other countries that may have significant Shia populations?
Well, the key thing is that the government mandates the religion. This is the state religion of Iran, and that the impact of that on how government is conducted means that ever since the Shahs were overthrown back in the late 1970s, it's been a religious state where the head of the government has been first the Ayatollah Khomeini and now the Ayatollah Khamenei. So there's a very direct line. And see, the key thing is that as an Ayatollah, he has the ability to pronounce the current instructions from God. He has enormous power of authority to speak with the voice of God effectively. And it means that built into this, into Shia Islam, is an authority that connects state and religious practice so intimately that really there is no other way to get close to the and to change the values of the state without getting the ear of the Ayatollah. But the Ayatollah's ear is not to be got because he's a religious leader.
Right. And does the Ayatollah's influence extend beyond Iran to Shias across the diaspora as well?
Yes. I mean, one of the issues that when the Shah fell, part of the issue was that the Shah had lost respect, even though he was himself Shia Muslim, of course, and that people were listening to the Ayatollah from the separated communities all across the world that were Shia Muslims. They were paying far more respect to the Ayatollah. So in the end, he was able to create a secret force that enabled him effectively to move Shia Muslims in Iran to overthrow the Shah.
Right. And I think a lot of this discussion obviously stems from events that have been happening over the past couple of weeks, and especially quite recently over the weekend with the United States bombing Iran. So kind of going back to what you were saying about, you know, the conflicts in the Middle East, would you say that, you know, they're stemmed by sectarian divide in the Middle East is, you know, like a prominent source of the conflicts going on at the moment?
Well, in some ways, it's the opposite. One of the most intriguing things that has happened in the past 3 days And it was all lined up already. And it's surprising, well, perhaps not surprising, that the Americans did not see this would happen, is that Sunni Islam and the great Sunni states, the Saudis, the Egyptians, etc., have steadily moved across to strong sympathy for Iran. Whereas previously, before Israel began, before the events of October 7th, they had tended to want nothing to do with Iran, and they blamed Iran, quite correctly, of course, for the various trouble points of the Middle East, the Houthis in the Yemen, and the groups both in Palestine and in Syria. They saw on every side, the problem was the Shia Muslims were not prepared to work cooperatively with other Muslims. But now it seems as though the Shia are back on their hind legs, and Sunni Muslims are reaching out and saying, this is outrageous, what's happened to you? So I'm not sure what is going to happen, but I think that America should be thinking this is pretty serious, when you might recall that not so very long ago Trump made this visit to Saudi, which had to be one of the oddest events of world history, really, and seemed to kowtow because he was the man of peace who was never going to intervene in anybody's state, and now he's bombing Iran.
Right. And do you think that perhaps normalize, you know, and leading up to the events of October 7th, we were beginning to see somewhat of a normalization between certain Sunni states and Israel, you know, particularly Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. Do you think that we could potentially see some form of normalization between some of the Sunni states in the region and Iran in the future?
Well, you see, the critical issue for most of the states has been what Hamas has been up to. And Hezbollah had been up to, because they're both Shia-led activist movements that, you know, received a lot of money from Iran. Now, both of them have effectively been destroyed. I mean, perhaps that's overstating the situation with some of them, but certainly they've been sustained massive blows. And in Syria, the fall of the regime also means that now you've got clearly mostly Sunnis in control of Syria. So I think we're going to see potentially, yes, I think we could see a much clearer basis upon which Iran, back on its hind legs, you know, very weak, and without able to pull various secret strings with distant players, may be willing to take help from Saudis. But it'll be on Saudi terms, because Saudi's a smart player.
Right. And how do you think that the United States and Israel would react if Iran were to have normalized relationships with a normalized relationship with Saudi Arabia and its Sunni neighbors?
Well, what could they say? I mean, I think it would lessen the dependence of the Saudis. Saudis had no particular reason to club up with the US because it's an unpopular position. Effectively, for lots of reasons, Sunni Islam has its own strong reasons to feel aggrieved with the US and, you know, in general, because in effect, we're watching a huge polar shift of the world, and the shift towards power for Islam was to some extent weakened because of the Sunni-Shia tension. And you know, that tension goes back a long, long way. It goes back to the death of Muhammad. The split between Shia and Sunni is about who Muhammad chose as his successor. And Ali, who was the person who Shia claimed as his successor, he was his cousin, they claimed that was the appointed leadership. And Ali did get his chance, which was a fairly disastrous chance, though I won't win any Shia friends by saying that, 20 years later, after the previous caliph was assassinated. But then Ali himself was assassinated when he was saying his prayers. So it's a pretty violent past that goes deep into the bitterest history. Should that rift be healed, it would be a very significant strengthening to Islam.
Right, and aside from who each of the sects appointed as the successor to the Prophet Muhammad, are there any significant differences between Sunni and Shia Islam, aside from sort of like who they appointed as a successor, or is it merely just political?
No, it wasn't. In essence, you see, the Shia Islam believed that the appointed successor to Muhammad would have, as Muhammad had himself, both religious and political sway. And so Ali was expected, and the subsequent imams, the 12 imams who followed in the Shia succession, had an enormous power that in the other the Sunni successive groups, there was a split. There was more of a split between religious leadership and political leadership. So that's a substantial difference that the leader of the Iranian state, in a sense, inherits this dual religious and political role. And so that is a significant difference.
Right. So could you maybe say that, or would it be safe to say that maybe the Shia believe that the successor would be almost like on equal footing to the Prophet Muhammad, whereas maybe the Sunni believe that, you know, no successor could come to his level?
No, that's going a bit far, because fundamentally Islam always shares the Quran and always shares the Prophet, you know, blessed be his name, sort of. That's the shared basis, which all Islam looks back to. But the thing is that the very next generation, they couldn't agree on anything. And though they were at the point of conquering the entire Middle East, and within a century, most of the North African world, they were deeply and utterly divided into what they stood for in terms of leadership. They could not work out how to govern, and thus there's a fluctuation in Islamic states as to whether it went towards the Sunni side or the Shia side. At one point in the 11th century, the Shia were hugely strong, and the Fatimid kingdom spread right across North Africa and Egypt. But since then, it's contracted into just the Iranian base.
Right. Well, I think we're coming up towards the end of the interview, but is there anything else you'd like to maybe add before we finish off?
Oh, well, I would love to hear what some of your listeners have, you know, any knowledge of more about how Shia affects in New Zealand, because my thing is there's one Shia mosque in New Zealand, whereas there are, 90 Sunni mosques. So what do Shia people who do, where do they worship if they're not living in East Auckland? How do they worship? How do they carry out their prayers?
Yeah, well, if we have any listeners right now who are Shia Muslim or they have knowledge about Shia Islam, please text us on 5395. Well, thank you very much, Peter. That was
Brilliant.
A really insightful discussion.
Nice to talk.
All right,
have
a great day. All right, moving forward, we're gonna play a track by one of my favorite Persian artists. I don't know if she's a practicing Shia Muslim, but she is phenomenal. This track is Parsham, which I believe is Parsi for flag, by Chai. But before I play that track, someone texted in earlier asking which were the two tracks I played before that song by Folk Bitch Trio. And those were Slippers by Synthetic Children and Hunting for Witches by Block Party. That is Slippers by Synthetic Children and Hunting for Witches by Block Party. Anyway, here is Parsham by Chai.